All right, everybody, welcome back to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast. I'm Devin Davidson, your host. With me, as always, my co-hosts, Bruce Gunther and John Enns. Boys, how are things?
I survived my mock draft, so I think I'm doing fine.
I partially survived my mock draft, so I think we're going to do okay.
good. Yeah, I got mine done too. I waffled on it. I probably spent a couple hours actually today just going through all the possibilities and who should go where. And I probably did three or four of them, honestly, and then just finally settled on one. But there was just so much that happened this weekend, right? Like,
yeah. Well, after yesterday's craziness, my original draft was just a disaster. There was nothing left of it. So I had to redo it all. So,
yeah, we were all in the same boat, right? It was like we had players picked and none of them were available or trades that happened. There's so many trades that happened, like all sorts of stuff. So this week we'll kind of follow the same format that we've been doing. So we're going to get into the hockey news here. We'll cover some of the things that happened over the last couple of days, which was fairly substantial. And then this is our final week for the Seattle expansion draft. We're doing the Mass Mutual East Division. And then I think what we're going to do this week is we're probably going to record on the Thursday after the expansion draft, just to kind of go over the team that was selected. I'm actually going to be in Canmore for my sister's wedding next weekend. So we'll try and record then and put it out there and give our thoughts on the final Seattle Kraken team. So with that, let's get into the news here. So on the 12th of July, the Ottawa Senators hired Pierre McGuire as their senior vice president of player development. What did you guys think of that one?
Personally, I burst out laughing when I read that, but but it's been well documented. I'm not a fan of Pierre McGuire, so
I don't know many people that are.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So the more I read into it, I didn't understand or know that he was so anti-analytics. Apparently, it's well documented that he doesn't feel that they have any place in hockey, and he's kind of he mentioned in his interview he's a boots on the ground type of guy. So for an organization like the Ottawa Senators, where right now they've really got to be focused on player development, to me that'd be troubling to hear. But
especially since he's the vice president of player development now, right? So
but
he also worked for the Senators previously too before he got into media.
Right.
So it makes some sense that they would hire them back. But when does anything the Ottawa Senators do actually make sense?
Yeah, they're an interesting franchise. They make some interesting moves, that's for sure. Okay, well, July 12th, Duncan Keith was officially traded to the Edmonton Oilers for Caleb Jones and a third-round pick. That was according to Frank Saravelli. No salary retained. John, I'm going to go to you first because I know you're not thrilled about the whole thing.
You know my opinion on this.
Yeah. What if I told you Duncan Keith got a haircut?
It might help, but still, the guy's, for me, he's just too old with too much salary there. Fantastic player. Giving up Jones, meh, whatever. Jones never impressed me. But the third round and the salary that Keith has, I'm just not a fan of it. I know he brings a lot to the table with his experience and everything else. He's got that winning mentality. He's been on some championship teams. But a guy his age for that much money, I'm just not a fan.
All right, fair enough. Bruce?
As the week has grown on, it's growing on me more and more. When I first heard about it, I was, this isn't going to work well, right? And then kind of listened to Keith's availability. I didn't listen to Holland's. I just listened to Keith's. And I liked a lot from what I heard because obviously the media to him reiterated a lot of, oh, you're going to be doing this, you're going to be doing that. And Keith goes, well, we'll see what happens when we hit the ice, boys. It's like, I don't think he's going to be settled to be on the second pair. I think he's going to push some of these guys, which I think is something that these guys haven't had in a while. There's no one there. They've got Smith and Nett that's got an incredible work ethic, right? So, but to get Keith in there now, his on-ice contributions, he's not anywhere close to where he was when he won his two Norris trophies, but he's going to push these boys, and I think that's what they need.
Yeah. Like, no, I'm excited about it. I think having him and Mike Smith there as two older statesmen and experienced guys, and they're both incredibly competitive, like you said, they're going to push the rest of the team and they're going to drag them into the fight. And that's kind of what they've been missing over the past few years, right? Like, you can't teach experience, right? So I think there's a lot of the intangibles they talk about. That's great. But it's the competitive nature of Duncan Keith and Mike Smith that is good to see.
Guy has seen just about everything, right? Olympics, Stanley Cups, World Cup. He's been in everything, right? So it's, it's just his cap hit that's ugly, right? Like, his salary is what, $3 million over the next 2 years? It's just the cap hit that's ugly. It's not his actual paid salary.
Yeah, I get the argument people wanted. I wanted salary retained, right? I thought they could have retained 30% or whatever. But you know what? At the end of the day, he's a Hall of Famer. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's going to teach these guys a lot. And I think it's going to be really good for the development of Ethan Bear, Darnell Nurse, Evan Bouchard. They just need to get Adam Larson signed. And I'm fairly confident it'll be fine this year. You know, hockey Twitter likes to get pretty fired up about some things, but anyway.
No buildings got burnt down in Edmonton, so I think we're okay.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. I think a lot of people, once they kind of thought about it and heard Keith speak, they calmed down a bit, but it was just that knee-jerk reaction, like, what do you mean we're paying a 38-year-old defenseman $5.5 million for the next 2 years, right?
Well, as we get through the news, we'll find out what else happened here, and that just didn't just added more fuel for the fire, right? So,
So we'll get into that here pretty soon. Pekka Rinne retired this week. 681 games played, 368 wins, 60 shutouts, a .917 save percentage, and 2.43 goals against average. Rinne was a fantasy stud for a long time, right, guys? Like, he was one of the first goalies off the board. But he has regressed in the past couple years fairly severely. UC Saros has taken over as the number one, and he was phenomenal last year. So the writing was on the wall. You know, he was going to be a backup this season coming up if he did play. And now he doesn't need to worry about it. So any parting thoughts on Pekka Rinne?
Not bad for an eighth round pick. They don't even do an eighth round anymore.
No, that's pretty damn good. For sure.
For an eighth round pick, I'd say he did beautifully. Him and Pavel Datsyuk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, John, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say that I just felt bad for the guy throughout his career. Up until lately, that team's been mediocre at best, and he's always been that one shining light in there. And for him to finish off the career there, I think it's good for him.
Well, let's jump into that quick, because it seems like he kind of got out while the getting was good. Like, that team, I don't know where they're headed, right? It looks like they've been trying to move Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene ahead of the expansion draft. We now know they're both exposed. They traded Ellis.
Arvidsson.
They traded Arvidsson. You know, like, that team's going to look drastically different next season. And from a fantasy perspective, I don't know that I like it all that much.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, Forsberg might be the only one you want to touch there. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they haven't gone out and outright said it, but like, I think they're moving into a rebuild here, right? It's pretty
competitive rebuild is what he called it.
A competitive rebuild. Okay,
that's what it was coined.
Well, you know what? It seems to be the thing now, guys rebuilding on the fly. It's not happening in 5 years. It's happening in two or three. They're kind of retooling. Like, look at New York. Look at LA.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Buffalo is a perennial
disaster
rebuild, but not much you can do about that one. So, I guess probably the biggest story of the week here, the Minnesota Wild bought out Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. So according to Cap Friendly, the buyouts provided the Wild with another $10.33 million in cap space this summer. They brought the total projected cap space to $26.2 million, which we know is important because they've got to sign Kirill Kaprizov and Kevin Fiala. But when you look at their dead cap space over the next two or three seasons, it kind of goes from, what was it, $4 million this year to $12 million the year after, and then it was $14.67 million for the next 2 years after that. Like, How do you operate a team with almost $15 million in dead cap space?
I have no idea. Like that's almost 15% of their cap.
Yeah.
If it stays flat, that's almost 15%.
Yeah. Well, we know the cap's going to go up probably within the next 3 years, right? The kind of people have been saying the next 2 years might stay flat, but after that it has to go up because we got fans back in the stands, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to have to hope that some of their prospects step up or they can get some low-cost people in for those years. Because they signed Kaprizov and Fiala to big deals that are longer than, 2 years. they're going to be in cap trouble.
Kaprizov's kind of looking for a four-year deal at $10 million a season.
Which is too much.
Which is too much.
Yeah, that's McDavid money. That's nuts.
It's outrageous.
Yeah.
They're paying Austin Matthews $10.5 million. Leon Draisaitl is making $8.5 million.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know what's going through Kaprizov's head, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Huh. He doesn't have to go back to the Wild. That's the other thing, too. He can just go home, right? So,
yeah.
And basically anywhere in Russia, they'll back up the Brinks truck for him, right? It doesn't matter where he goes in Russia, they'll pay him, right? So. Yeah.
I don't know. He'll be back. I'm fairly confident that deal's going to get done. Bill Guerin's not going to let him slip away for nothing. Kevin Fiala's going to get done. And then I will be targeting one or both of those players in redraft leagues next year.
Of course.
I was going to say, I'll have to reach for him if I want to get Kaprizov ahead of Bruce because he's pretty hot and horny for that Wild team right now.
We'll see what's left after the expansion draft.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, enough Wild talk. Dominic Ducharme extended was extended as the Montreal Canadiens head coach for 3 more seasons. Good to see there. I guess by all accounts, the players are happy with him, leading up to and into the playoffs. One of the players, I think it was Corey Perry, said, yeah, he's a legitimate NHL coach. We love playing for him. So good to see there.
He's got a couple of mighty challenges ahead of him.
Yeah, so I guess let's touch on that too. I went in chronological order here like we usually do, but let's just get into the Canadians. So the other big bit of news here this week was Shea Weber. So what was it? His thumb, his ankle, and his knee?
Yes.
And it's reported that he's going to miss all of next season, and he was exposed in the expansion draft this week. So that's a bit of a punch to the gut after making it to the Stanley Cup final, and now you're captain and your best defenseman is done for a year.
Mm-hmm. That's the optimistic side of it is a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Cause we don't know beyond that. Like he could just retire. He's 36, right?
Well, if he retires, Nashville's pretty much done as a team. the cap recapture, if he retires, is brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you recall what it was, Bruce?
I think by the end of the fourth, there's 5 years left in his deal or four. The last year of the deal, I think it was something like $24 million.
Oh my God.
In the cap for cap recapture if he retires. It was just a brutal number.
Yikes. Well, I guess to add to matters, Carey Price waived his no move clause for purposes of exposure in the Seattle expansion draft. And today we just learned also that he may be going in for surgery. Nobody actually knows what it is because LeBrun reported, I think, that it was a knee, and then Saravalli reported it was a hip injury. So I don't know what's going on with Price, but he could be out next season too, they said, or for a significant portion of it. John, what do you think on that whole strategy to expose Price?
I don't really know what to say about it. I just had to kind of laugh today when those stories came out about Price because it's kind of like one of those things where you're trying to make it so the other team doesn't want to take him. Just leak a bunch of stories and just hope for the best. But I know they didn't really want to lose Jake Allen, but exposing Price is a dangerous thing to do.
Totally.
But you know me, I'm not the biggest Carey Price fan. Well, he's a fantastic tender, but...
But he's not Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, that's right. It's just his cap hit and his age that that gets to me. Like, he's going to be 34 here in August. He's got another 4 or 5 years left on that deal at 10.5 million. So, yeah, I don't know.
I like, you know what? If I'm Seattle, I'm really giving some serious consideration to draft. I mean, that was before the injury news, right? But
yeah,
man, I don't know. Like, okay, so he's 33 right now. He's turning 34 by the time the season starts. How old is Marc-Andre Fleury when he just won a Vezina?
37
years old.
38 later this year.
And Carey Price, I would argue, is a more technically sound goaltender than Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't get me wrong. I love
Fair
Flower.
Enough. Fair enough.
But Price is very efficient in his movements, and it should allow him to play longer. Well into his later ages, right? I mean, how old was Dominik Hasek when he retired?
He was 40-something, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Right? So I'm just saying, like, okay, you got 5 years left to Carey Price between the ages of 33 and 38. There's no reason he can't be at least an above-average goaltender. And he plays phenomenally well in the playoffs. Somebody was chirping me on social media the other day, and I said, well, look at his playoff numbers the last 5 years. He's basically been the best goaltender in the playoffs over the past 5 seasons.
The only one better than him this year won the Stanley Cup in Vasilevsky.
Exactly, and their team was X number of dollars over the cap. So, and I'm not one of those cap people that's screaming bloody murder about the whole thing, but I'm just saying they had a very, very good team.
Which Montreal is now doing for next year.
Yeah, we're just going to load up
the expansion draft, right?
Everybody on LTIR, so, we're going to load up right before the deadline.
Price and Weber, so that's what, almost $18 million for the two of them, right? So,
yeah, it's a big chunk of change.
And they're healthy just in time for game one of the playoffs.
Just watch. Just wait and see. Okay. There's lots of news this week. So Pierre LeBrun and Darren Drager reported on Insider Training that Gabriel Landeskog and the Colorado Avalanche were not close on a new contract. The Avs captain, by all accounts, was not happy. He was pretty offended by the whole situation. Looks like he's going to free agency, and we now know that he's been exposed in the Seattle expansion draft. Excuse me. So it's interesting to see what happens here, because now Seattle's into that window where they've got exclusive negotiating rights with UFAs and RFAs until the 21st. He could be signed by Seattle if he chooses to, or he could wait until free agency. I don't know. Like, what do you guys think? What are the odds that he's going to sign somewhere else? I'd love to see Edmonton sign him. I think he'd be a great fit next to Connor. Seattle would be a good fit. He'd probably be their captain. Like, what do you guys think?
Well, he's not going to get the money he wants, because the only team that can possibly do that right now is, well, Seattle, Detroit. And Detroit's not going to do it. And Seattle's talking about keeping cap flexibility, so there's no way they're going to sign him to a long-term deal. So, well, he'll be back in Colorado, but it's not going to be the dollar amount that he wants.
Because it was reported he wanted somewhere between $9 and $10 million. I don't know if that's accurate. I've also heard numbers in the sevens. Like, if you were Ken Holland, would you sign Landeskog to a 5 or 6 year deal at 7 or 7.5?
I could probably do 7, but nothing more.
Yeah, I'm with Bruce on this one. I'd do 7, 7.5. Yeah, sure, but nothing higher than that for sure.
I mean,
if you pay Landeskog 7, so McKinnon's contract, he'll be 27. He's due in 23-24. So if they were to pay Landeskog 8, 8.5. You imagine what McKinnon's going to get? Or going to want?
McKinnon's on record saying he'll take another discount on his next contract. He wants to win a cup. That's all he cares about. You know, he might get 9. He might say, give me 8.5. Like, I think he's really just most concerned about surrounding himself with good players. That's all he wants.
Because they still have Makar to do. They've got Gerard's locked up for a while. Taves is locked up for a while, but
they got to sign Grubauer or another goaltender.
They got to sign a goalie, right? So it's they have cap space, but it can vanish pretty fast, right? So
yeah,
I don't know. I think he's going to find. I think he's going to find out what Taylor Hall did. It's not a, it's going to be a little rough out there.
Well, do you want to go play for Buffalo for $8 million and score three goals? Like,
yeah,
you know, or do you, you know, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, right? Like sometimes it just makes sense to stay where you are and get paid fairly. Like, I don't know why he wouldn't think about that. Or if he's going to try and better, like better situation, who's the one player that's maybe better than Nathan MacKinnon?
Yeah.
There's two of them and they play for the Oilers. And so if I'm Landeskog, if that's an option, I'm going to think about that. And I'd far rather see the Oilers sign Landeskog than Hyman. I don't understand the hysteria for Zach Hyman. Look, I like him as a player. What's his career high? Like 41 points? And he wants like $6 million a season? No, thank you.
Yeah. Agreed. Hyman is overrated in my books as well. I haven't really seen anything from him that really impresses me. So I think someone like Landeskog, definitely the better choice, even if it does cost you an extra million or so.
Yeah, no doubt. Continuing on that thought of contracts, Jeff Skinner agreed to waive his no movement clause for purpose of exposure in the expansion draft. That was according to Lance Lanowski. I put out a poll. I don't think it was a pretty low percentage. It was like 30% voted that Seattle would sign him. What do you guys think?
Those 30% are smoking something. There is no way Seattle is touching that. Like, Buffalo would basically have to send all of their draft picks for the next 2 years over there, and they probably still wouldn't take that contract.
It's only $9 million a year, Bruce.
Yeah, who else is making $9 million and playing on the fourth line?
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit, because a couple people have made mention that his production has declined over the last two seasons. But to me, it's sort of a chicken and the egg thing, because he hasn't been given a fair shake to play in the top six, realistically. I'm not advocating for the Kraken to sign him, but I'm just saying you're paying the guy $9 million a year and you're sticking him on the fourth line next to God knows who. Why isn't he playing in the top six? Why isn't he playing on your first power play unit?
Like, for $9 million, exactly. Like, granted, this year was quite a bit of a shit show for them, but
the entire Sabres team, yeah.
Yeah, but you look at Skinner, right? The guy can put up points. He can put the puck in the net. It's not like he's... Skills don't evaporate overnight, right? It's...
No,
I don't know if it's a Buffalo curse or whatever it is. The kid can score. He just needs... You got to surround him with some players that can give him the puck.
Yeah. And he's a phenomenal skater.
And they just... for whatever, Buffalo just can't do that.
Yeah,
and if they trade Eichel and Reinhardt away, there's even going to be less people there to do it. So I don't know.
Yeah, certainly. It just seems like the morale around that team just brings everybody down who plays there. So you can send the best player out there, and they'll just be average. It seems.
Well, they were better.
Nobody wants to play there. It seems to, and when nobody wants to play, then you don't play well, and that just reflects everybody.
Well, part of the issue there is, like, everyone that comes in is like a mercenary, right? It's like, okay, give me $8 or $9 million to sign here, and a year or two later, they all want to leave. So, like, there's no sense of team. There's no camaraderie there. Like, you can't, what do you do? It's an interesting case, the Buffalo Sabres. So, Elliot Friedman reported that Keith Yandle will be bought out by the Florida Panthers, which we obviously now know happened. I think that was kind of bound to happen, right? We saw that happen, we saw something coming at the start of last season when he almost didn't play, right? The first game they were going to sit him out, and his Iron Man streak was in jeopardy. So not a big surprise, but he's going to get picked up somewhere, right? Like, I think he's still a capable, even if he's a bottom pairing defenseman and a power play specialist. So keep an eye on where he goes next year, and might be a value pickup in redraft leagues. Anthony Duclair. So speaking of Florida, Anthony Duclair signed a 3-year contract with a $3 million AAV. He was a pending RFA. He had 32 points, 10 goals, and 43 games played. He was awesome last year next to Sam Bennett and Jonathan Huberdeau. Any thoughts on Duclair guys, that signing?
It's great. It's great for him. I think he's finally found himself a home where he's appreciated and he feels comfortable. Right. And it's showing, right.
The same could be said for Sam Bennett, right?
Yeah. Both of those guys. Right. So like we all Duclair coming out of his draft, like he got drafted, the Coyotes, which was, well, it's with the Coyotes then, right? So, and still, but yeah, he's playing with Huberdeau and Bennett, right? So, and really, if Duclair wouldn't have been hurt, he's probably a lot closer to a point per game than his stats even show, because they were, they had no trouble putting the puck in that line.
That was a deadly line down the stretch and into the playoffs last year. So that's a good stacking option, I think, whether it's for DFS or in redraft leagues, right? I'm going to be looking to grab at least one or two of those guys.
Absolutely.
Probably Bennett and Huberdeau, actually. Like I like Duclair, but if I can grab Huberdeau and Bennett, just because Bennett's got more category coverage. Mm-hmm. Okay. Ben Bishop waived his no move clause for the purpose of exposure in the expansion draft. I guess this allowed Dallas to protect Anton Khudobin. Ottinger was exempt. And I guess we'll see what happens. I don't really see I don't see the Kraken grabbing Bishop as one of their goalies. So, I mean, it might be irrelevant, but what do you guys think?
I see that as a safe play as well. I don't see the Kraken taking Bishop at all.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, so
but I don't know what they're going to do with them either, so.
Yeah, because they want Ottinger to play, right? Like, somebody's going to take Ben Bishop. It's probably just going to be at a discount, I would think.
Yeah. Well, and he has a no-move clause, so he's got a say in where he's going to go too, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll find out soon enough. What else do we have here? Ryan Graves was traded to the New Jersey Devils for Mikhail Maltov and a second-round pick in 2021. Excuse me. There was a lot of this going on this week where GMs are just trying to protect their assets, right? They know they're going to lose a player for nothing, and they're just trying to get some sort of return ahead of the expansion draft. I would say it's relatively a minor trade, except for Ryan Graves as an impact player, and I thought he was going into the Kraken, right? What'd you guys think?
He was my pick for Colorado until he got traded, so.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah, that was the one that blew up my mock draft, so.
There's a few of those this weekend.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Leddy was traded to the Red Wings for Richard Panik and a 2021 second round pick. The Islanders, or 50% of Panik's salary was retained. Again, not a shock.
No,
that's.
I think Detroit can handle that.
Exactly. Space there. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's just Lamoriello trying to clear out some cap space, right? He wants to make some other moves. I guess speaking of the Islanders, they traded away Andrew Ladd as well. And a bunch of picks. I don't know what the return was. Did the Islanders actually get a return? Yeah, there's nothing, right?
No, that was, they gave away a bunch of stuff. They didn't get any, all they got back was cap space and, that was it. They got cap space.
Have you ever seen that before?
No, I haven't. Not that I can remember.
No, I've never seen that where they just give away a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's dead cap space, right? Lou's probably dancing right now that he got rid of Andrew Ladd, but that was interesting to me. Back to the Leddy trade quick, though. Where do you guys think he slots in next year as a defenseman? Like, I think he was the best offensive, in terms of points anyway, defenseman for the Islanders. He goes to the Red Wings where they've kind of got Filip Ronek and Dennis Cholowski, I think, are kind of the only two guys there. Do you think he kind of slides in on the first unit power play there, or where do you see Leddy next season?
I'm thinking he'll end up on the second one. They're going to let Hronik,
whatever you say his name. Yeah,
he's going to get the first power play time unless he's stone cold, and then they'll move Leddy in there. But I think you'll see Leddy on the second one.
Okay. I am in agreement with Bruce there on that one, 100%.
All right. Pierre LeBrun reported that all signs are pointing towards Chris Drieger being signed by the Seattle Kraken, and that's going to be their pick from the Panthers. He'd be a great ad for the Kraken. He was sixth in save percentage last year with a .927, sixth in goals against average with a .207. He was eighth in goals saved above average at 11.88, and he was 10th in shutouts with 3. So he was awesome last year. I picked him up off the waiver wire because I had Bobrovsky, and they were kind of splitting time, and then Bobrovsky was sitting. So this is great to see. I think if he does get signed in Seattle, he's going to either be their starter or he's going to be splitting the net with, a couple of the goalies. So the reported ask is $3.5 million for Chris Drieger.
Sign him, sign it, get it done.
Yeah.
So you can even repeat that or even do slightly better. $3.5 million do that quickly.
Oh yeah.
Very quickly before his ask goes up. Cause if this is just scratching the surface of what he can do. Sign him now, sign him quickly.
So do you think if he goes to Seattle and he's the starter, like let's say they take Vanecek and Kapanen, and it could be a tandem situation, but let's say he goes to Seattle and he's a starter. Is Chris Drieger a top 10 goalie, fantasy goalie next season?
As long as they don't overload him right away, absolutely. So if they can do a 1A and a 1B, so you play 82 game season, so if he can play, say, 55 games and you've got someone that can come up and play the remaining 37, yeah, absolutely, he can be. But if they're going to do what the Oilers did to Cam Talbot to him, he's got no chance.
Well, Talbot had 40 wins that one season, if you'll recall.
Yeah, and then after that, he got absolutely steamrolled.
he fell apart the next season, I know.
He's going to look like John Gibson in Anaheim. He's going to look fantastic for the first part of the season. And then as you get to the second half of the season, he's just going to slowly get worse and worse because he's just done. He's burned out by the time you get that.
Yeah.
Because that's what Anaheim does to Gibson every year. He comes out with a hot start, and then just right around Christmas time, he's toast. And then because they got no one else there. They had Ryan Miller, right? And they can't play Ryan Miller for 30-some games. So,
nope.
So as long as they...
Sorry, Bruce. Okay.
As long as they can manage his starts, so they can keep him to around 50 starts, 50, 55 starts, I think it'll be fantastic for him.
Okay.
But any John, more than that, they're in trouble.
Yeah, I agree. It's all up to time management on that one. If
load management.
Sorry, load management. My bad.
Careful, Kawhi might have trademarked that term.
Yeah. Okay. Bruce saying, if he can play that around that 55 game mark and then have someone else who's solid to back him up there, I see him as definitely as a top 10 attendee. For years to come. He just needs to get that extra experience into him, and once he has that, he'll be good to go.
Okay, boring radio, because I agree too, so good stuff. Miro Heiskanen signed an 8-year contract with an AAV of $8.45 million. From a fantasy perspective, he's ranked in the top 15 by NHL.com. Do you guys see him being potentially higher than that, or where do you guys kind of see Miro Heiskanen going into next season?
I'd put him top 10. I like the guy. Plays a solid game. He's high on my D-man list. I think it's a good contract for him.
Where does Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes rate compared to Heiskanen?
Well, Makar is in a different tier, right? Like if tier one is franchise defenseman, that's where Makar is. Is Heiskanen there? Like it's maybe, I don't know. I don't know if he's quite there in terms of offensive output, right? And part of the problem is that he's got John Klingberg still in Dallas to contend with. And Klingberg's been getting a lot of power play one time, and Heiskanen's either been splitting it or he's been moved from PP1 to PP2. If he gets that role, I'd say, yeah, he probably is on the same level as Makar, but he's just not there yet. Right.
Yeah. I haven't seen much of him play. So I was a little surprised to see the cap number. I didn't think it was going to be that high, but.
And I think it's reasonable if you, look at just going on cap friendly right now here. I think in the first year or two, it's actually quite reasonable. Well, I guess they've just got the AAV shown here, but I thought in terms of actual salary, it was like $5 million or something in the first year. But I could be wrong. So I don't know. He kind of, his coming out party was when Dallas went to the final, not last year, like the year before. And the media was just, it was kind of like, it was like Braden Point every year in the playoffs, right? They just, everyone oogles over Braden Point in the playoffs. It was kind of, that's what they're doing with Miro Heiskanen when they went to the cup final. So
yeah,
so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, his salary for 21-22 is $5 million, then seven, then 10, then 11, 11, and then nine.
Yeah. There you go.
All I'm saying is Cale Makar is licking his chops right now.
Oh, yeah.
That's what Heiskanen got. Mm-hmm. Makar is going to get McDavid money based on that.
Well, that's what he should get. But because of the cap, do you think he's going to look at it and go, like, I'd rather sign our captain back and I'd rather sign a goalie and like, I don't know. How do you guys think players view that? Like, is it all about the money or do some guys go, because McDavid, I know he's getting paid $12.5 million, but he did think about that when he signed.
Yeah. I think it depends a lot on the player. So Colorado was already up there with Tampa, right, for who's going to win the Stanley Cup next year, right? So I hope they take that into account, because if not, they're going to quickly take Colorado right out of the running with some of these, like, yikes, like, yeah. I hope they're taking into an account. You end up like basketball, right, where you got three players that make 80% of the money and you got a bunch of nobodies. And
well, that's okay in basketball because your stars play 50 minutes out of a 60-minute game, right? Whereas hockey, they play a third of it.
Yeah.
Maybe. So yeah, should be interesting. The Sharks traded Yosef Korinar and a second-round pick in 2022 for Aiden Hill and a seventh-round pick in 2022. So Aiden Hill was on my list for the Kraken. I thought he was going to get signed.
Yep.
Again, this is just a case of GMs protecting their assets. Good young goaltender goes to...
It's a great move for San Jose because Aiden Hill basically has been the starting goalie for the Coyotes for the past, 2 years? Because Kemper and Ranta can't stay healthy. So now, because obviously he slides into San Jose and his competition is Martin Jones, which really is no competition. So
no,
it's going to be his crease to lose in San Jose, which is great for him because he deserves it. He's earned it in the last 2 years in Arizona.
So do you think he's a sleeper for next season, Aiden Hill? Like, is he a guy you could maybe pick in the 15th or 16th round and maybe he gets you 20 or 25 wins?
I think so. Look at what he did behind an Arizona team, right?
Yep.
Arguably San Jose has got more talent on paper than what Arizona does. So yeah, absolutely. I think he could be.
Yeah. Yeah. He's someone I'll look at, I think, but Jason Dickinson traded from Dallas to Vancouver. I would generally argue that's kind of a small trade, except for Jason Dickinson was one of those guys everybody thought was going to get picked by the Kraken, right? So he's gone. As we mentioned, Ryan Ellis was traded for, this is a big one, right, on Saturday, the Ryan Ellis for Philip Myers and Nolan Patrick. Patrick was then traded to Vegas for Cody Glass. So a three-way deal there. I think, the fantasy implications of that, like Ryan Ellis is probably going to play on that top pairing with Ivan Provorov. Mm-hmm. I don't know that his production is going to spike any relative to Nashville. I think Provorov's still probably going to get that power play time, right? Or am I wrong? What do you guys think?
I think so. I think Ellis will be there, though. So if he's there, it'll be take some pressure off. Or what they might do is they might just put both of them on the power play. So that way Provorov doesn't necessarily feel like he has to carry the entire load. Ellis is there and he can definitely handle it because he's got one hell of a shot too. So,
Nolan Patrick gets a fresh start in Vegas. He's had some real, he's been a bust, right? As far as top two or three picks go, he's just had injury concerns. But, Vegas, I think they took that personally. the whole center depth situation, right? They got criticized for it in the playoffs. You know, Chandler Stephenson's your number one center, and they made some noise yesterday going out and getting Nolan Patrick and Brett Howden from the New York Rangers. So they bolstered their center depth there. And then, you know, for Cody Glass, I don't think his situation really changes much going to Nashville, right? Like, he's kind of, he's going to play farther down the lineup, I think.
Yeah.
Or he's going to move to the wing.
Yeah, there were some high hopes for him, and he just hasn't lived up to expectations on that one either. So, yeah, I think he's going to play lower in the lineup for sure.
Well,
so what do you think about Nolan Patrick there, John? Like, now him playing, you tell me, like, where is he going to play, and where do you see him going in redraft leagues next year?
In redraft leagues next year, I don't see him going too high just because there is always that injury concern for him. I'd really like to see him flourish. He came into the league with big expectations, and obviously that just hasn't panned out. I'd be really happy if he did well. I'd like to see that comeback from players like that. But yeah, I think if you do end up taking him, there's going to be those guys who do end up taking him mid tier, a little higher than usual. But I think he'll be lower down in the draft leagues.
Well, and I'm just thinking, if he gets a chance to play with Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty,
yeah,
like if he kind of replaces Chandler Stephenson on that first line, because there's no question he's a more talented player than Chandler Stephenson.
Oh, for sure.
It's just, is he healthy? Can he stay healthy?
Yeah.
So I would say probably a guy you want to look at as a bounce back candidate for next season, or as a sleeper. I don't know, Bruce. What do you think?
I'm thinking along the same lines, because the second line in Vegas is pretty much set, right? So you're not going to see any change there. So he's either going to be in the first line or he's going to be in the third line, right? So it's...
Well, and if he plays in the third line, he's playing with Alex Tuch probably, right?
Yeah. I'm guessing they'll probably start him on the third line is where I see they'll start, and they'll see, just try to gauge where he's at health-wise and that. And then, yeah, if he's doing well, then he'll work his way up to the first line.
Yeah, try and shelter his minutes a bit, I guess.
Yeah, just to see because he hasn't played a ton, right? So it's...
Yeah. Yeah, I know that. And actually, him next to Tuch, I think, would be a pretty solid third line.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Tuch is going to be an incredible player. Well, he is an incredible player. He will be going forward, too, for Vegas. So
he's going to go way too high in redraft leagues next year.
Yeah.
Recency bias, and everyone's going to way overpay for Alex Tuch. Yeah. And I like him a lot, but... He's almost one of those players where he's more valuable in real hockey than he is in fantasy.
Yeah.
But.
Well, look in the playoffs, right? So.
Yeah. But buyer beware.
One nice thing for Cody Glass is Nashville is going to have a lot more patience for Cody Glass than Vegas did. Because Vegas is they want to win now. That is win now. Nashville is doing their competitive rebuild. So they're going to be more patient with him, right? Because he's not going to supplant Johansson and Duchesne right away, because those two aren't going anywhere. Seattle's not touching either one of them unless
I think they will, Bruce, but we'll talk about that.
I think there's got to be a deal involved. Otherwise, I don't see. He's basically, I think they've got him. He's going to slide in. So when something does happen to one of those two, he's going to replace one of those two, whether it be he'll end up probably being the second line center. And then if he can work his way, he'll work into first and push the other person down. But he'll start probably in the third line center, and he'll work his way up too. So,
all right, let's move along here. So this morning, the NHL released the protected list for all 30 NHL teams. Some things of note here. So, you know, after the Nolan Patrick trade, a lot of people are saying, okay, great, they moved Nolan Patrick, they freed up a forward spot. They're probably going to protect JVR now, right? Because they told Voracek in no uncertain terms he was being moved one way or the other, and the thought was JVR be protected, but he has been exposed in the expansion draft. So I find that interesting, especially given his play last year, right? I think he was on like a 60 something point pace.
It was nuts.
He played great last year. So for me, yeah, kind of an odd move by Philly not to protect him.
He did that from the third line to boot.
Yeah.
I think the highest he ever got was second line. He never made it up to the first line.
Yeah.
So he did that all. It's
well, and we'll get into like the expansion stuff here soon, but I'll just say really quick for me, like, I think Seattle does take him. And I think if he goes to Seattle, he's going to do really well. And I'll talk about that more when I get to my part of that draft. But yeah, that's my take on it anyway. So as expected, Mark Giordano was exposed by the Calgary Flames. No surprises there. He's going to be a good veteran leader for that decor in Seattle, I think.
Yep, I agree.
John, you're laughing. Why are you laughing? He doesn't have any hair. You can't even make fun of his haircut.
No, but it's the cap hitting the age again for me. So,
but it's 1 year. It's yeah, 1 year at 6.75.
Yeah.
Right. So if they don't like him, flip him at the deadline.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
See you later. Thanks for coming.
Yep. Basically, that's why I'm okay with it if they take him. But yeah.
And I mean, if nobody wants to take him to the deadline, well, then he just walks in free agency and handshake. Thanks, see you later.
Yeah.
I thought this one was interesting. The Minnesota Wild chose to protect the older Cam Talbot over Kaapo Kähkönen. Talbot's numbers were better this year, but he's 33 years old and he's more expensive, as a higher cap hit. So what was your guys' take on their decision to protect Talbot and not Kähkönen? Bruce, I'll ask you because I know that's pretty much your favorite team now besides the Oilers. So.
I hope Guerin has a plan B because Kähkönen will not be playing for the Wild next year. He may not play for Seattle either, but I think Seattle is going to draft him and then they're going to flip him, I think is what's going to happen.
You don't think they'll keep him, eh?
No. I think, as we get to the draft teams, we'll save it for that, but I don't... I think he's played his last game for the Wild, so I hope Guerin's got a plan B for a backup because they are going to lose him.
I thought, again, this was peculiar to me. So after acquiring Jared McCann in a trade from Pittsburgh, the Toronto Maple Leafs chose not to protect him in the expansion draft. I like Jared McCann. I picked him up off waivers last year when Malkin went down. He played great. He was like almost a point-per-game player for Pittsburgh last year. I think he'd be a really, really solid third-line center in Toronto. I don't understand the decision to acquire the asset and then expose him. And they're not protecting Alex Kerfoot either. So is it just the fact of, okay, we bolstered our depth, take who you want, we don't care? Or like, what's the thought there? I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I've given up trying to figure out what Dubas is doing in Toronto. Really, I have. I've given up trying to figure it out because he's completely reactionary. I don't know what all the hype was. Like, I read all the hype and stuff, but I just don't get it. He's a reactionary GM. He is not a proactive GM at all. He is completely reactionary. And let's put it this way. If the Leafs don't do anything this year, he won't be around for much longer either. So.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
John, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I just couldn't believe that they made the trade for him and then decided not to protect him. It kind of just floored me. Don't really have a whole lot else to say other than that. It's
okay. No, it's fair enough. It's an odd move. The Islanders elected not to protect Jordan Eberle, which we've been hearing this for a couple weeks now, right? That he was potentially like he was available for trade, and if they couldn't move him, then he was going to be exposed in the draft. So not shocking. But that if he does get selected, that's a significant loss for them, right? Because given his playoff performance the past two seasons, he's going to be tough to replace. And at around $5 million a season, he still has a pretty reasonable cap hit.
Yep.
Oh, other than the year they chased him out of Edmonton, he's been a consistent 60-point-a-year player, right? So,
well, and that was his first time in the playoffs, right? And actually, you know, not having scored, but the rest of his game looked pretty good. Like, I was impressed with Eberle. He was actually throwing hits, which he never does, and he got in the playoffs, and, you know, he turned up the physical play, and I will forever be a Jordan Eberle fan.
Likewise.
It's unfortunate that Edmonton moved him out, but thanks, Pete Chiarelli. Jerk.
Yep.
Gabe Landeskog, again, not protected. I don't know. So, you know, it's surprising to me, like they protected Philip Grubauer. He was one of two UFA goalies that was protected. So obviously the Avalanche are hoping to still sign Grubauer. It's a little odd to me that the Avalanche didn't even protect. I get that he's a UFA, right? So they don't have to sign him until after, maybe they have a backdoor deal, right? Maybe they have an agreement that he's going to get signed after free agency. But I mean, now you're exposing him to Seattle for the next 4 days, and he might be gone, right?
I don't see Seattle going there. I just don't. Not for what he's asking. I just can't see it. And like, you're going to leave a perennial Stanley Cup contender to go to an expansion team? Like, if you're going to do that, then it's all about the money, but Seattle's not going to give him the money he wants.
That's totally
rational. I can't see it happening.
We'll talk about that stuff more, but I'm just surprised the way the whole thing's been handled. I would have thought it would have been a quick negotiation. Colorado would have just signed up their captain and moved on, but as was reported, Carey Price was exposed, as we had mentioned. Let's just touch on it one last time here, quick, guys. So, yay or nay, are you signing Price? John?
No.
Bruce?
Yes, just to see them burn down the city of Montreal.
That's honestly all I want. It's for the chaos factor. I just want to see them sign Price to watch Bergevin lose his marbles and watch the city of Montreal just burn it down. Because I don't understand why you would protect Jake Allen and expose Carey Price. It's just not a good move in my books. But
as someone said, even if he is injured and misses part of the season, just to have him come into Seattle and be the face of the franchise, kind of like what Fleury did for Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
His signing bonus of $1 million or $11 million that's due in September, they'll make $11 million in Fleury jerseys by then. They could easily cover his salary.
They're Price jerseys, like, you mean?
Or for a Price jersey, sorry, for in the Pacific Northwest there. Because he's only a few hours away from home by car.
Yeah.
Like, it's
hop on a ferry and head back home. You know, I like it for a lot of reasons. Like,
it's
from
dangerous.
A franchise goaltender perspective.
Really
from
dangerous.
You know, geography, all those things. There's a pile of reasons why it makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. So with that, let's move into the expansion draft here, the MassMutual East Division. So this is our last iteration of the series. We're going to go over this one last division, and then we'll at the end, we're going to kind of give you guys a total breakdown of what our teams look like. I will include rosters by Bruce, John, and myself in the show notes. You guys can see the players we selected in their entirety. If you're just listening to this episode and you haven't listened to past episodes, please take some time, go back, listen to them. We go over some of the expansion draft rules and eligibility if you don't already know all that stuff. It's going to be included in the show notes as well, so feel free to, you know, hop on the website at fantasyhockeyhacks.com. Some of the important dates are in there as well. Just kind of what's coming up here for the expansion draft and free agency and all that kind of fun stuff. So with that, let's start with the first team here, the Boston Bruins. The past few episodes, we've gone through the protected lists. Obviously, the protected lists are available now. They're public, so we're not going to go over who we think is going to get protected because that's obviously a waste of time. So with that, we're just going to get into picks. My pick here for Boston, for Seattle to select, would be Nick Ritchie. He's a good, solid bottom six forward with size, 6'2", 230 pounds. He can chip in with some offense. He had 26 points, 15 goals in 56 games this past season. He's a guy, he can play in your bottom six, bring some physicality, and can score some goals. He'd be my pick for Seattle. Bruce, who'd you have for Boston?
So for me, I picked Jeremy Lazon. So he's still a young defenseman. He can play either left side or right side. He filled in for Boston this year in the playoffs when all of their defensemen were dropping like flies. And he's basically the odd defenseman out, right? They can't protect all of them. He's got NHL experience, like quite a bit of it, and he's only 24. So I think he'll be a good fit in Seattle, someone they possibly could sign long-term after the end of next year.
Yeah, I had him as my alternate pick if Nick Ritchie wasn't the guy. John, who'd you have?
So I'm just going over my team again here because I had some issues with my new picks because of the protected list. I originally had Trent Frederick, but I'm going to have to go with Nick Ritchie.
Good choice.
Too good not to. Like you said, he's a big guy, 6'2", 230, and yeah, he's just a good player all around.
Yeah, you need some toughness in your lineup, and I think he fits that bill, and he's still reasonably affordable. I think he's around 1.2, or that was his last contract anyway, right? So let's take a look. Yeah, he's currently an RFA with arbitration rights, but yeah, he's only 25 years old, so I like that pick for them. Let's move on to the Buffalo Sabres. I kind of went back and forth. Actually, originally my pick was Rasmus Asplund. But then, of course, we know that he was protected in the list that were released today. So I went with Zemgus Girgensson. He's a former first rounder, 14th overall. He missed all of 2020-2021 with a hamstring tear that he suffered in training camp. But he's under contract for two more seasons at $2.2 million. So he's an affordable option. He's a good third line checker with some first round pedigree. So that's my pick for the Buffalo Sabres. Bruce, who'd you have?
Continue with my defenseman theme. I went with Colin Miller. So he'll be the first player to be drafted by both Vegas and Seattle.
Interesting.
Solid right hand defenseman. He's got some offensive upside too. He ran the power play for the first season and a half for Vegas when they drafted him. He'll be a solid defenseman for Seattle. Once they get some feet under them, get some of their young guys in there. Before they get some of their young guys in there, they'll give them some stability there on the right side.
I like that pick, actually.
Yeah, me too.
John?
Yeah. I like Bruce's pick, but I'm actually in the same boat as you, as I had Rasmus Asplund as my original pick, but Zemgus Girgensons is... looking like a decent option there as well. Cap hit's not terrible. I'm sure he'll have a bounce back year, so I'm going with that one.
Okay, perfect. Let's move right along here to the New Jersey Devils. To be honest, they didn't have much that I was falling over. A guy like Will Butcher, if not for his cap hit, I probably would have given him a hard long look.
Yep.
PK Subban was available if anybody wanted to spend the cash. I doubt it at this point. So my pick for the Devils was Nick Merkley. He's a first round pick, 30th overall from 2015. He's a skilled player that's been able to produce at the AHL level, but it hasn't necessarily transitioned into the NHL game. And he projects currently as a bit of a bottom six forward with some speed. So not even speed, sorry, but just some skill. So that's my pick there. Bruce?
That was my pick as well, because I had a very tough time trying to figure out who to pick from New Jersey, because there isn't a lot there once you take the protected list away.
I struggled with that one. And John, who'd you take?
I actually went with... Nathan Bastian.
Okay. Yep.
Reasoning, he's a big guy, 6'4", 205. Merkley is a bit of a smaller guy. He's, like you say, he's had lots of AHL experience, but he's just starting to get into his NHL feet under him. And I think Nathan Bastian, he's a year younger, but I think he'll turn out to be a solid player.
Okay.
Point production wise, I see them being pretty close anyways. So,
and I mean, if it's close in terms of production, you always go with size where you can, right?
Yeah.
Just really quickly, I was scrolling through Instagram. There's something here from Oilers Daily, and this is from the DFO Rundown podcast. They're reporting it's unlikely that Adam Larson stays in Edmonton. There's a real chance Tyson Barrie stays. And there's some interest around Zach Cassian from other teams in the league.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
I don't know how I feel about that.
We've been saying forever that we'd love for Tyson Barrie to stay, but it just wouldn't happen. And now that you say that, it's odd coming out of my mouth, but Adam Larson, maybe the fact of him going, a little bit scary. I've never been a big Adam Larson guy, but he's changed it around for me, so I don't want to see him go. But
no, like it's really funny, because if you'd asked me at the start of the year if I cared if he stayed or went, I would have said, yeah, it doesn't matter, he can go. But you know, you check every list now of top 10 defensive defensemen, and Adam Larson's name is right up there. So, and I was kind of hoping he was going to be there with Duncan Keith to help with defensive play. Like, I don't know. It's going to be helter skelter now if you put Tyson Barry and Duncan Keith on that second pairing.
Yep.
That would be very scary.
Oh, boy. Okay, sorry, I got us off track here. I just wanted to mention it. That was interesting. So let's move on to the New York Islanders here really quickly. So my pick here was Kiefer Bellows. I think it's kind of the popular pick right now, the consensus pick in general with the Islanders. He's the 19th pick in the 2016 draft. So there's some pedigree there and some scoring potential. Scouting report suggests he has a skill set to be a productive top six scorer at the NHL level. Although at 23 years of age, you know, the time is sort of starting to run out on that. So probably worth a gamble anyway. Bruce, who'd you have for the Islanders?
I went totally off script. I went with Jordan Eberle. So
I like it.
As I mentioned before, he's a perennial 60-point player. He'll play first or second line, wherever, right wing, wherever Seattle needs him, and he'll put up points for him. Right, he's played on that side of the continent before in the West, so he knows what it's like and what it needs to put up points there. So I think he'll be right back at home there.
And he can grow a hell of a beard. But in all seriousness, though, I'm a big Jordan Eberle fan. He's just a big time player, right? Like for me, yeah. And for most people, I think the first time they really had an appreciation for him was at the World Juniors in 2009. Like I still get chills watching that goal.
Me too.
And then when he scored his first NHL goal against the Flames.
Oh my.
Well, yeah, you guys know I've got that autographed picture in my office. Like I just blows my mind every time I watch that one.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he's continued to be productive into his later years in his career. So you've got my stamp of approval on that one, Bruce. But so saying that, like let's assume he goes to Seattle. He's probably going to play in the top six.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where are you taking him in redraft leagues next year?
Probably be very similar to where he went this year. I don't think I would. I'm not going to reach for him or move him up. I think I'd leave him right where he is in there. It'll be curious to see who he's going to get for a centerman and a left winger, but right now I wouldn't think I'd draft him any higher than he went last year.
Do you remember where he went? I don't recall. I think it was later in the draft, but
I think it was later in the draft that he went.
Okay. I'll take a look at that. John, in the meantime, what'd you think for the Islanders?
My original pick for the Islanders was Scott Mayfield, but, they kind of blew that one out for me. So I'm with Bruce, Jordan Eberle. He's just a solid guy, solid player. And like you guys said, I want to see who he's going to have centering him before I know where I'm picking him in my leagues.
Fair enough. I just quick here. He was drafted in our ESPN league 174th overall. So a late round pick for sure. But yeah, probably worth it at that stage in the draft anyway. Alrighty. New York Rangers. I kind of went off the board here. So forever, like in every mock I've done up to this point, Colin Blackwell was my pick. Today I kind of went through it. And as I was piecing together my team, I kind of went, you know what? Why wouldn't they take a shot on Tony DeAngelo? Like we all know the story. It's a risky pick, but how many young right shot defensemen that can run a power play are just sitting there? And there's a couple things to consider here. So first off, the Rangers have already said they're going to buy him out. So realistically, Seattle's going to wait until he's bought out after the expansion draft, and then they might make him an offer. But then a lot of other teams are going to already be in there as well, right?
Yeah.
So right now they've got that exclusive window to negotiate with them. They're going to pay his full cap at $4.8 million for the upcoming season, but it's his last year on that contract, and then he's an RFA. So you still retain control of the player. You get 1 year at $4.8 million, And in 2019-20, his last full season, he put up 53 points, 15 goals in 68 games. That's good enough for a 64-point pace over 82 games. So you're getting a very, very capable right-hand shot defenseman who at worst is going to play in your second pair if the Seattle Kraken take him. So I'm just making the argument. I'm not saying I like the player on a personal level, but when you look at the performance, there could be an argument made. What do you guys think?
I think from a point perspective and everything else, he looks like fantastic, but I'd just be worried about the way he affects the rest of the dressing room.
So that was the other thing too, is sorry to cut you off. When I looked at my lineup, the way I built it, you've got some pretty strong personalities in that room.
Right.
And that's why when I looked at my mock draft, it made sense. But I totally agree with you. Like you take that player if you've got the right personnel in the locker room.
Yeah, if you surround him with the right people, I think he could turn himself around as a player and as a human being, so to say.
Okay, cool. Bruce, what do you think?
Yeah, if you can get the off ice issues or whatever it is that's affecting him cleared up. Yeah, he's proven he can do it, right? So it's. Yeah, take a shot at it. Absolutely. He wasn't my pick for Seattle, but I went with Blackwell.
Yep.
But yeah, no, it's worth a gamble. And too, when the Rangers suspended him, there were teams that were lining up for him. They were willing to take a chance on him. It's just D'Angelo didn't want to go. So
yeah, I just think it's a calculated risk, right? If it's 1 year and if it doesn't work out, you're not on the hook for this guy for 3 or 4 or 5 years. And even at $4.8 million, given what he could do, it's not an unreasonable cap hit.
Not at all.
Like, what did Tyson Barrie get paid last year? 3.2? Right? So, I mean, pretty comparable anyway. John, did we get your pick for the Rangers?
My original pick was Brett Howden, but... Man, I was just having a bad day the other day. you really gave a good hearty explanation there for wanting to take Tony D'Angelo, but I might just err on the side of caution on that one and take Blackwell as well as Bruce there.
Yeah, I like Blackwell. You know, he spent some time centering Panarin and Strome this year in New York. There was a stretch from the 28th of March to the 18th of April where he had 12 points in 12 games. He had 6 goals. So he has the ability to be productive given the opportunity. I wouldn't hesitate to grab him either. Like, that is for sure the safer pick, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Just quickly back to D'Angelo. So if he is taken by the Kraken, just hypothetically, where are you guys going to take him next year in drafts?
If he's there in the later rounds, I probably grab him, but I won't reach for him.
Like, he's not a top 10 round pick for you, Bruce?
No.
Not for John?
Me. I think he's in around that round 10 for me or so. If he's there and he's playing well, for sure. I think that if he does go there, I think he will play well. I think around that round 10 or so.
Okay. Just that got me thinking of something. I'm kind of working on an exercise here on the side for some later episodes. Kind of what the perfect draft would look like. So that's like a future episode I kind of want us to get into. And when I went back and looked at all of our ESPN drafts, most defensemen, it seems, unless it's a really, like, it's an elite defenseman, a lot of them are being taken in round 7 through 12. And then some later picks, but just something to keep in mind. So I wouldn't be surprised if D'Angelo does play on a good team next year, if he falls somewhere in that range. The Philadelphia Flyers. So, you know, we were talking about this earlier. JVR is my pick here. I know Voracek is available. JVR produced at a 63-point pace is what it was, which is basically what you'd expect from him. His 3-year average in an 82-game season includes 57 points, 27 goals. So he's basically a 30-30 guy. 200 shots on goal, shooting percentage of 14. So the argument I would make is that if he does get opportunity on the top line, on the first power play unit, it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect 250 shots on goal from him next season and for him to flirt with 35 goals, possibly more, right? It just depends on his usage. Like Bruce, you mentioned earlier, he produced as well as he did playing on the third line.
Yeah.
So if given a real chance on a pretty good team, and in a weaker Pacific division, right? Like they've got Anaheim, LA, San Jose, Vancouver. I'd be really curious to see where he gets positioned next year if he does go to the Kraken.
Yeah. He was my pick as well. That was pretty much a no-brainer for me to get as my pick.
John, what do you think?
Well, once my pick got traded to Vegas, I guess I had to change mine. So, my original pick was Nolan Patrick, but yeah, JVR. Just solid. I got nothing else to say other than that.
Just a solid pick. Okay, you're bitter. I know. I get it.
But I'm really happy Patrick went to Vegas. So,
yeah, no, I think that's going to be a good start for him. I was excited to see that too because he wasn't doing well in Philly.
Nope. Time for a change.
Yeah. All right. Who do we have next? We've got the Pittsburgh Penguins. For me, it's kind of always been Zach Aston-Reese. He's an excellent forechecker. He's a defensively minded bottom six forward. He's an analytics darling, as they say, and he's affordable. So that's my guy from Pittsburgh. What do you guys think?
I went totally off script. I went with Jason Zucker.
So I like that pick actually, Bruce.
Kraken are going to need someone. They're going to need some people that can put the puck in the net, right? And Zucker did well in Minnesota before he got traded. I just think they're going to need some top six forwards that can do the work, right? And I think Zucker will fit in there quite nicely for them.
Yeah, I like that pick. The only reason I didn't go with him here was I went with some other talented forwards that had larger cap hits, and he wasn't going to fit within my particular mock draft, but I like the pick. John, who'd you have?
I was kind of torn between going with a forward or defense on this one. I wasn't quite sure which way I wanted to run with. I talked about Aston-Reese, but I think I'm still going to go with Marcus Peterson. I know his cap hits high at 4, but I like what I see from him. Seems like a solid defenseman. So Marcus Peterson is my pick.
However you say it.
Yep.
Okay. Good stuff. And that brings us to our last team in the MassMutual East, and that's the Washington Capitals. I went with Vitek Vanacek. He was basically an average starting NHL goaltender last season. So including goaltenders at least 10 games played, league average was .909. And a 2.76 goals against average. Vanacek was almost right on with a .908 save percentage, which was 31st, a 2.69 goals against average, which was 30th, and a negative .16 goals saved above average, which also ranked 31st. He had 21 wins and 37 games played. So for reference, though, Vanacek had a better save percentage than Darcy Kemper, Sergei Bobrovsky, Anton Khudobin, Jacob Markstrom, John Gibson, Freddie Anderson, and the aforementioned Carey Price. So, I will say Vitek Vanacek
deserves $10 million
is very, very good value. And that's, I think, where a lot of people are coming in and saying, why would you take Carey Price to $10.5 million? Because Vitek Vanacek basically does the same thing for less than $1 million.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress.
I know we had that conversation before, but like you say, Price in the playoffs, the playoffs is where you need the experience, and Vanacek just didn't have that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'll mention too, I made a note. So Vanacek did have a stretch of 9 games, 6 wins in the third quarter of the season where he played exceptionally well. He had a .935 save percentage, a 1.93 goals against average, and a 6.54 goals saved above average. So the potential's there. He could play very, very well in the regular season. At a very reasonable cap hit. Bruce, what did you think? Who's your pick for Washington?
Vanacek was my pick for the Kraken as well. Again, kind of like I mentioned before with Kaapo Kähkönen, I'm not 100% sure he starts the season in Seattle, but he will be Seattle's It will be Seattle's pick for Washington, from Washington.
Okay. John?
My pick was Vanacek as well. I just see him and Driedger as a very good goalie tandem.
Agreed. Okay, well, guys, that brings us to the end of our MassMutual East Division breakdown. I'm excited. Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock Eastern, I guess 6 o'clock our time, the Seattle expansion draft is going to take place. The following evening, we're going to record our podcast, so you can expect to see our thoughts on the expansion draft on Friday morning. Beyond that, I'm just trying to think what we had planned here, guys. I guess we'll get into free agency talk probably after that, most likely, hey?
Take that, or do we want to cover that or the draft itself?
Yeah, so we'll have the expansion draft, then there's the entry draft. Free agent frenzy is going to be happening. So I think August 1st, we'll probably talk about free agent frenzy. And then I guess I'm bringing this up now. It's kind of a bad time, but I thought we'd kind of get into, you know, how to win your fantasy hockey league. So like a guide to wingers, guide to centers, guide to defensemen. And we just break those down. So for anyone listening, that's kind of where I'm thinking we'll go in August, just as kind of a prep for all the drafts that are coming in the fall. And then that would kind of come lead up to what the perfect draft would look like. And we'll do something like that in September. So breaking it down by round and looking at sleepers and breakout candidates and rookies and all sorts of things like that. Go through some mock drafts. So we got a lot coming up here throughout the summer still. Don't go anywhere. So with that, guys, is there anything else you want to cover before we sign off for the week?
Not for me, no.
Okay.
I think we've got everything covered that I could think of. Just another fun show to do, and it'll be fun to see what the Kraken end up with.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that was a lot of fun, guys. I'm looking forward to Wednesday. Guys, if you want to subscribe to the podcast, we're pretty much wherever you can find your podcast. Check out our website, fantasyhockeyhacks.com. Follow us on Instagram at fantasyhockeyhacks, on Twitter at FHHacks. And if you have any questions or comments, you want to email us, fantasyhockeyhacks@gmail.com. And John, what do you got for us?
I just wanted to say that I took your updated mock draft that you sent me today, and I put it through the NHL simulation machine, and we actually made playoffs this time. So
okay.
It was good. It was good. Second round loss to the Minnesota Wild. So
okay. So my second mock then was improved over the first, where I lost to Calgary 4-1 in the first round.
That is correct.
Okay.
And sorry, Bruce, mine and yours didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I didn't expect my first one to make the playoffs.
I guess I mention that, guys? Yeah, I'm gonna put the mock drafts from each of us in the show notes here. So make sure to reference that back on our website. So you can see what John and Bruce did and what I did. And I guess that's that. So, guys, thanks a lot. It was fun. As always, we'll talk more next week.
Good night, everyone.
Hey, sounds good. Good night, everybody.
All right. Take care.